So I will go up in the scale, so mostly things that are happening on the micro scale, and continue. I'm currently in the Max Planck Institute of Colloids and Interfaces in the theory department. To outline what the talk will be about is first a couple of words about vesicle equilibrium and what is so, and then I will be talking about vesicles in flow and why are we interested in this. And the punchline will be that the deformation of this object is important and does matter. So first I'll spend a couple of slides on the motivation, which is the effect of flow on cells and particular blood flow. I will overview some examples from work on deformation of vesicles in flow without boundaries. Then I will look at the effects of the presence of a wall. Then think what happens if vesicles are moving through capillaries, narrow channels. I doubt I have time, but if anybody's interested, we can talk about rheology suspensions. So these are all problems which are one body problem. And here is a problem of many vesicles or many cells interacting in the hydrodynamic flow. I will present some of the work I've been doing on numerical simulations and analytical work in more details. And probably because my main focus on my work is understanding cell adhesion under flow, if I have time, I will be talking also some experimental work on vesicle adhesion to substrates. And if I talk too fast, please tell me so, because I have a tendency to speed up. So a couple of words about vesicles in equilibrium. So vesicles are these closed bags of this phospholipid bilayer membrane, which Jamal already introduced, and the other people will be talking about. So they're very thin membrane and closed in a fluid. Usually, what I'm interested in is giant unilamellar vesicles, which are about 1500 microns. And why? Because they have the they have the cell size. So basically, by understanding the mechanical properties of these vesicles, we can also infer some information about mechanical properties of cells. These membranes are much easier to bend than to stretch, and the bending energy in the simplest model, which is without any spontaneous curvature whatsoever, is given by the Helfrich Hamiltonian, which includes the bending energy and some constraints for area conservation and volume conservation, as we said, because these vesicles are closed surfaces. This minimal model was able to present, so it was able to predict most of the equilibrium shapes of vesicles, and so this area is more or less well understood. This is a sort of a phase diagram one gets, which is the bending energy as a function of the reduced volume. The reduced volume being defined as the volume of the vesicle divided by sort of the equivalent volume of a sphere corresponding with the same area the vesicle has. So the minimal model predicts things like oblates and prolate shapes and also stomatocytes. So in general, in reality, shapes can be much more weirder and there are more involved problems dealing with the equilibrium shapes of vesicles. But for the time being, I'll stick to the minimal model in my, like when I'm considering the dynamics, I'll stick to the minimal model simply because it's the simplest and then we'll make it more and more complicated. So about the motivation, the motivation is understanding the interaction of a cell and the fluid environment when in flow. So there are many examples of the importance of hydrodynamics in physiological processes. One example is the Ferrier's effect, which is the observed decrease in the apparent blood viscosity when the blood is flowing through narrow capillaries. And so it's been, now it's been understood that it's attributed to the existence of a layer near the wall, near the blood vessel wall, which is depleted of red blood cells. So in such a way, the viscosity here is closer to the viscosity of the blood plasma, which is much lower than the viscosity of the bulk of the blood. And therefore, the blood is flowing easier. Basically, at the same pressure drop, you can pump more blood through the capillary. And this also helps the heart. So it's one of the ways the heart gets the fluid moving all the way to the all parts of our body. Other examples of the role of hydrodynamics in physiological processes is the cell traffic between the bloodstream and the tissues. This being like, for example, tumor metastasis or the inflammatory response in which, the inflammatory response, which is the basically how the leukocytes or the white blood cells get recruited from the blood flow to heal an injury. So I'm an engineer, so if I say something wrong for the biologist, what I understand is that the leukocyte has to migrate from the blood to the endothelium and attach itself. So there is a period in which it's exhibiting sort of a rolling motion before it firmly adhere and do its job. However, during this process, the leukocyte can really get deformed, and sometimes this deformation can lead, actually, I'll show in a bit later, to a liftoff. So it might be, the hydrodynamics might prevent the white blood cell from going all the way to its target. These dynamics of cells in flow has stimulated the interest in understanding vesical dynamics in flow. This is a very simplistic view of a cell. If we place the cell in a shear flow, which is basically the flow between two parallel plates, what is observed that the vesicle deforms, and at low shear rates, it attains a sort of stationary shape with certain inclination angle with respect to the flow direction. And the membrane is tank treading, so it's moving with a constant velocity. There were recent experiments published in PRL in which people measured this deformation as a function of, and the deformation and the inclination angle as a function of the excess area available for deformation. However, there are quite few outstanding questions related to understanding the predicting the deformation. There can be various stationary shapes, and actually there can be even flow-induced shape transformations. When the shear rate is increased, so the flow is much stronger, what is observed that the vesicle starts to tumble, so the inclination angle basically goes to zero, and then the vesicle starts rotating with the flow. And a new mode that it's been observed recently in this experimental paper is that the vesicle basically at very high shear rates and high viscosity ratios, basically the fluid inside is much more viscous than the fluid outside, they have this breathing mode in which the vesicle is expanding and contracting within the flow direction. So the questions remaining to be answered is the transition, this transition to tumbling, and also to predict this breathing mode. So this was all about behavior in unbounded flow. However, my interests are in the effects of the presence of a wall. So basically, the cell is adhering to a substrate, what's happening in flow. And there was a recent experiment in which a vesicle was observed from the side. This is a phase contrast microscopy. So this is a vesicle sitting on a glass substrate. This is the reflection. So when the flow is turned on, the vesicle slowly deforms, and at some point it attains a certain inclination and angle and inclination, and then it lifts off and goes away from the substrate.
Question: are those different shears, or is that a time series?
This is time series. Yes. So it's the same flow, but it's just different snapshots at different time. So if the vesicle is not very deformable and the flow is not very strong, the vesicle is just sits. So it's doing this tank treading. So it moves with the flow, and it's doing some. The membrane is doing tank treading. However,
what's the white circle?
It's a defect. So it's a defect on the membrane. So they could follow the motion of the defect, which shows that the membrane is moving. So it's tank treading. So they could measure this tank treading frequency.
Wait, so did they add the white circle to show where the defect is, or is that something?
They just add it. Yeah.
Okay. So you can. It's like a marker.
Yeah, it's a marker. Also, so basically, um, um, so this this was the time series of this experiment. So this is what it looks like if you move with the vesicle, with the flow. And the questions remained is to characterize the force, the magnitude of this force, how it depends on the parameters of the system, like the strength of the flow, the reduced volume, the distance from the substrate, does the bending play any role whatsoever. So roughly speaking, when the deformation matters, the lift force is quadratic with the strength of the flow. Once the shape is just an ellipsoid and it doesn't change anymore, the lift force becomes linear with the flow. So what happens when we make the flow even more confined? Such as the capillaries. So what is observed that the vesicle, when pushed through capillaries, deform in parachute-like shapes, which resemble the one that the red blood cells have in the narrow capillaries. So these are different vesicles in microchannels. This corresponds to different vesicles which have been have different reduced volume. So the more deflated the vesicle, the more deformed. And recent numerical simulations looked into this sort of phase, the transformation from discocyte, which is the typical red blood cell shape, to a parachute. So this is the sort of a course. I'm sorry. It's plain here, but it's not plain here.
Draw function F8 again.
Function?
F8.
Oops.
Maybe. Just more.
No. I'm sorry. It's just.
It worked.
I'm kind of a Linux person, so okay, I can show the movie to whoever wants, but the point is that people observe this in simulations that you go from a discocyte to parachute, but still, you know, one can look into much more details into this problem. So these were more or less the motivation and what was going on in the field. So the field of looking at how deformable objects behave in flow, it's not new. I mean, this is not a new problem. It's a typical example of a free surface boundary problem in which the deformable object communicates with the flow. What happens is that the flow deforms the shape, but the shape reacts back and changes the flow. And so I come from a field of drops. I've been studying drops for a while, looking how they deform in flows. So these are examples of objects with compressible surface. So the area can change, and in this case, the surface tension rule. However, with the vesicles, the area is conserved, and the bending rules. So this changes the dynamics quite a bit. So when we look at drops, at equilibrium, the shape is very simple because the surface tension wants to minimize the surface area. The shape is always spherical, and if we have some impurity like surfactant, the distribution is uniform, and the pressure drop, the pressure jump across the surface is given by the Laplace equation. Once you turn the flow, the shape deforms, which changes the curvature. We have the so-called capillary stresses. So these are stresses which are trying to bring back the drop to its equilibrium spherical shape. And if you have a second component, if you have a surfactant, meaning the impurity on the surface, it will also get redistributed. It will be, and you get gradients in the tension, which are the so-called Marangoni stresses. This redistribution of surfactant has been also observed in experiments. This is a fluorescently labeled surfactant in extensional flow. So the flow is sweeping the impurity towards the drop tips. Similar dynamics we would expect also with if you have a vesicle with mixed lipids. So they will move. They will be convected with the flow. So what's new with vesicles? Well, a lot is new, and it's quite different from drops. So So first of all, the shape not doesn't need to be spherical. You can have a discocite. You can have many different starting shapes. The vesicle is rough, meaning that because the bending modulus is so low, the shape is the membrane is fluctuating, and so even if the shape is looking spherical in equilibrium, there can be a lot of areas stored in these small amplitude fluctuations which are beyond optical resolution. And in equilibrium, again, we have a pressure jump across the surface. And then in addition to this simple Laplace law term from before, we have a term which comes from the bending, and it's quite complicated. This is the mean curvature. This is the Gaussian curvature. What happens in flow, in addition to the capillary stresses, which were the stresses trying to bring the object back to its equilibrium shape, we have bending stresses proportional to the gradients of the curvature. One new feature is that the area is conserved, so the true area is conserved, so the interface is incompressible. And we will have Marangoni-type stresses, which are due to gradients in the effective tension. So these Marangoni-type stresses are a bit subtle because they come from the requiring the interface to be incompressible. So the tension has to adjust to keep the interface to keep the area constant. So unlike drops, so for the drops, the surface tension is a prescribed property and the area is changing. For the vesicles, the area is sort of the prescribed constraint and the tension is changing to adjust to the area. So to recap, when we looked at the vesicle or drop, when we look at these deformable objects in flow, we can understand the dynamics as an interplay between a distorting and several restoring mechanisms. So the shear flow, a simple shear flow, can be decomposed into a pure extension and rotational component. And so the vesicle is being deformed by the extensional component of the flow. So basically the vesicle is being pulled along the extensional axis of the flow and it's being stretched along it. The restoring mechanism, so we have a capillary, it's a relaxation driven by capillary stresses, so this is a relaxation which, okay, the vesicle wants to keep its shape, its area constant. A bending relaxation, so the relaxation is the mechanism in which the shape wants to go back gradients in curvatures are penalized, so we want to have minimum curvature in the shape. And if you have a second component in the vesicle, you can have Marangoni, so these sort of interfacial tension gradients, which are more subtle and, it's a different issue, but basically if you have a second component, you will want to go back to uniform distribution. If you have effective tension, it's a little bit more complicated. Relaxation mechanism in flow is the rotation, because the rotational component is moving the object, so it's rotating the object away from the extensional axis of the flow towards the compressional axis of the flow. So therefore, if the vesicle is stretched, it rotates towards the compression. It's being pushed back, so it deforms less. One thing to notice here is that all these time scales are depend on the viscosity contrast between the object and inside and outside fluid. So the higher the viscosity, the longer these time scales are. So we see that the rotation time scale is independent of the viscosity ratio, which says that basically that's why high viscosity vesicles tumble, because it's much faster to tumble than to deform them. Of course, if you have such abundance of time scales, you can have lots of parameters to explore in the dynamics, and it gets too messy. So to keep the long story short, I will just focus on a very simple model, which has two parameters. One is the capillary number, which is the ratio of the capillary relaxation and the distortion time scale. And the other one, so I'll focus on the effect of bending. So this is a bit of a weird model, because I will actually, even though I was stressing how important the area conservation is, for the time being, I'm not conserving it. So the two parameters in the work I've been doing are the flow strength, and this is the bending parameter, which measures the relative importance of the capillary, of the tension, and the bending stresses. So, any questions so far, or I've been going too fast? A little bit of fluid dynamics because it might not be that familiar. The equations I'll be solving is we're in the Stokes flow regime, in which the Reynolds number, which is the ratio of viscous to inertial forces, it's very small. Oops, yeah. It's very small, and this means that when the fluid element is moving, at each moment all the forces are balanced which are acting on this fluid. And these are the viscous forces and sort of pressure gradient forces. So we have to solve for the flow inside and the flow outside, and in general we can have a different viscosity ratios. To solve for the flow inside and outside, well, we have to match the two solutions, so we have boundary conditions saying that the velocity should be continuous across the surface, so the velocity in and out are the same, and the shape changes and adjusts in such a way that it's with the normal velocity to the surface.
So there's no flow in the membrane itself.
There is in general this is the surface velocity. So there is no slip, if it's what you mean. So the velocity.
Right, so you could have the two bilayers, for example. The bilayer could flow relative to each other.
Yeah,
and
they
that
can.
Has a viscosity, but that's not.
That's not. It can be incorporated in general. It's not a big problem, but.
Okay.
It's a next order effect. In addition to these velocity conditions, we have to add the condition for the stresses. And these are saying that the viscous stresses are the stresses due to the flow, which are produced by the flow inside and outside, are balanced by the interfacial stresses. So these are the capillary and the bending, and in general, Marangoni stresses, which for the time being I'm going to throw out. To complement the problem, we need to enforce incompressible surface. For the incompressible surface, we have condition for area conservation, and one has to supplement a way to change the tension. And this is a difficult problem for the time being. For a compressible surface, we can follow the lipid, sort of effective lipid density on the vesicle surface and write sort of it's a mass conservation law for the lipid density, and we have to prescribe the dependence of the tension on the lipid concentration. Again, these are a little bit more involved conditions, and we're working on them. But right now, I will be just looking at compressible surface, only one component, only one lipid, and in the future, more. The solution of the Stokes equations can be easily represented in terms of the Green's function. So if we have, for those from physicists with electrostatics, if we have a point force acting in the origin, the solution is given in terms of the Green's function, which for the Stokes equation is the Ossian tensor. And in the general case, when we have our vesicle with the interfacial stresses, so this whole these interfacial stresses acting on the vesicle surface, because the Stokes equations are linear, we can think of basically just having distribution of point forces on the surface and integrate over the vesicle surface to get the disturbance that the vesicle is producing in the flow. This is just very generic formalism for getting the so-called integral representation for the velocity. Why I'm bothering presenting this? First, it has the parallel with electrostatics, which we have, again, these Green's functions and singularities formalism. And second, this is the way we solve our equations for in numerics and analytical, in analytically. A few words about analytical.
So the Green's function, the Austin tensor should work in an unbounded, right?
Yeah.
You've got a vesicle, I mean, some of the fluid is bound, right, on the inside of the vesicle.
Yeah, well. So it just, we have just, that was a very smart thing. Okay, I kind of implied that the viscosity inside is the same as the viscosity outside. So the for Stokes flow, in general, you will have, so there is the integral, so there will be the integral of the Green's function and the interfacial stresses, plus there is another integral, which is more complicated. And this integral is the so-called double layer integral, and it depends on the viscosity contrast. So there is a scattering because of viscosity contrast. So if the flow, if we think of the flow as incident like waves and being like incident flow and being scattered. But in general, if the viscosity contrast is one, so the fluid inside and outside, this drops out. So just for simplicity, I didn't consider it here.
So the conservation of all the inside vessels doesn't affect the Austin tensor?
Stokes flow preserves volume automatically. So it's in the equations.
Okay, that I agree. Look, the divergence is zero, right?
Yes.
But, I mean, if you look at the hydrodynamic solution next to a wall or something
mm-hmm.
where the flow is confined,
mm-hmm.
it changes the Austin tensor.
Yeah, I will be talking about this in a second.
So, okay, I guess
so
what I'm asking is why is that not different inside a vesicle? Why is the fact that you're inside a vesicle not?
Because you can always, so there's this, you can always think of, so you, instead of thinking of the equations, okay, flow inside, flow outside, you can just think of having just the same fluid everywhere and distribution of forces somewhere. Okay, it's, so you're so, okay.
You said it exactly right.
Yeah, but what he meant is that, okay, what I said that this is the flow outside of the vesicle because I don't care about the flow inside. So for the Green's function inside, never thought about it.
No, you said it right the first time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I mean, that's, thanks. where was, okay, So once we have the solution for the unbounded flow, the first step is to characterize the behavior of the vesicles in unbounded flow, and then I'll look at what's happening in the, when there is a wall present. So we've developed some analytical solutions for the deformation of a quasi-spherical vesicle in shear. So in this case, we represent the surface, the deviation from a sphere. We expand everything in spherical harmonics, and so this sort of perturbation, and we do a regular perturbation around the sphere. So far, people looked only at the leading order perturbation, and actually we're interested in to seeing what's happening on the next order, to see this nonlinear coupling between shape evolution and the flow. So to see this two-way communication between the deformation and the flow. For the time being, I'm looking at this weak flow regime and just considering the case where the bending and the tension work like comparable. Just for those who are interested in math and things like this, why I'm choosing spherical harmonics, because once you use the integral formalism. Like once you represent the velocity field, the stresses, everything in spherical harmonics, recoupling of these integrals is very easy using the Clebsch-Gordan series. And there is a well-developed work in quantum quantum mechanics. For the simulations, So for the small deformations, we have these nice analytical results. And for large distortions, we will do numerical simulations, again, using this boundary integral method. And I'm stressing again, so this is the proper representation for viscosity ratio 1. So there is a whole term missing here for when the viscosity contrast is not 1. It's not, I mean, I can show it, but it's not so important. The two features of the method, the two features of the method that we have is that we can do adaptive remeshing. So basically, we discretize the surface of the vesicle, and we can add and take out points on the surface at will. For example, this is an example of another simulation of a drop in buoyancy. So there's a lot of deformation going on, and the point density is highest in the neck region. So there is a way of resolving very accurately the regions of high curvature. And this would be eventually important when I'm looking at things like budding or something like this. The second, actually the biggest problem, not the biggest, but my contribution to this whole thing was to add the bending stresses. So as we saw before, the bending stresses evolve Laplacians of the curvature, and the curvature itself is the second derivative of the surface. So we have to take like fourth order derivatives of the profile, and this has to be done very accurately. So we worked our way around, and now we have a pretty stable algorithm to put the bending stresses. This is just an example of just an ellipsoid, and the distribution of color-coded are the distribution of the bending stresses. So we have high bending stresses on the equator. And we check the code against, so this is a three-dimensional simulation, and we check the code against the axisymmetric code that we have, and it's quite accurate, and this runs quite fast. I mean, I can run them on my laptop, the simulations in a few, like an hour or so. Just an example what the code can do. This is the comparison of the behavior of a drop with, I mean, the elastic vesicle and drop without bending. Unfortunately, it's not very exciting. So when you don't have bending stresses, the drop can deform a lot. So this is a relatively strong flow. So drops break up beyond capillary number 1. So in strong flows, they elongate, and there is a line. They again, this they get this inclination with respect to the flow. When we add bending, the bending kind of, because it penalizes the deformation, the bending brings stronger bending, makes the object less deformable. Again, color coded is the strength of the bending stresses. So in the future.
But in the no bending, the surface tension?
There is a surface tension, yes.
And in the bending one, there's, you have this incompressible surface. So this.
Right now we have a it's a compressible surface, so it can change. That's why I said it's not that exciting right now. It was just a test run for the to check the bending stresses, how the code works with them. So, and to compare, so there is a comparison between the small deformation analysis and the simulations. So we have the deformation parameter defined as the amplitude of the second order harmonic, which is the ellipsoidal deformation, as a function of the strength of the flow for the case without bending and with bending. And the simulations agree with the small deformations quite well, which makes us confident about the accuracy of the simulations.
It's
Our next order theory, because he has
on square.
He
So it's, it goes beyond the Seifert.
It goes beyond Seifert, yeah. So coming to the question, which actually was more exciting about me when I started this work, is okay, why the red blood cells go away from the wall. It's not such a trivial question. I mean, because it's well known that spherical, neutrally buoyant particles do not migrate away from the wall. So if there is a sphere here, it just keeps moving and never goes away. And one can argue this based on symmetry considerations, because the Stokes flow equations are linear, meaning that if we reverse the flow, so assume that the particle is migrating away from the wall, so if we reverse the flow, everything should change sign. So forces and velocity should change sign, and actually we get that the particle should migrate towards the wall. But if you are an observer looking in this direction to this flow and in this direction to this flow, these are completely identical situations. So the only way you can kind of reconciliate them is to just that there is no migration velocity. So spherical particle never goes away, never drifts with respect to the wall. So one needs to break the symmetry in order to have migration, and the mechanisms for migration come from deformation. So for example, deformable drops are found to migrate away from a wall, and yeah, you can have a spherical object migrating away from the wall, but you have to, for example, if you have a surfactant, because the surfactant can redistribute and distort assume sort of non-symmetric distribution with respect to the flow, you can again have migration away from the wall. And in our case, the migration mechanism will be provided by the deformation of the vesicle. And the question is, okay, so to a leading order, this migration velocity decreases with the distance from the wall. Of course, you know, the farther you are from the wall, the smaller the effect of it. And it's at least a second order effect, because the flow first has to deform the spherical drop and then make it move away. So the question is, how does the bending will change the scaling and the overall effect? Just a quick summary how we do the solutions and simulations. So as I said, for unbounded flow, we had the Olsen tensor here, which is the point for solution. What happens if we have a wall? Well, using this analogy with electrostatics, there is this image type solutions. So if there is a shear free surface like a fluid-fluid interface, all we need to add is a point, like if we have a point force here, a point force with a negative sign, and then we satisfy the boundary conditions on the interface. And this has to be incorporated into the Green's function. Once we have a rigid wall, higher order singularities has to be added. So if this is the strength, so these are like a doublet and something more weird for the Stokes flow, which is a source doublet. H is the distance from H is the distance of the point force to the wall. So respectively, for a rigid wall, this Green's function has to be modified. And currently, so we are working on the simulations and understanding the vesicle unbinding from a substrate. So this is a simulation of, well, that's a vesicle. That's a vesicle. This is the substrate, and this is its image. And again, this is the distribution of the bending stresses. I think here the bending was pretty weak, because I don't know if you can see, but there is just a little bit of bending in the whole problem. And this sort of so what we observe is that the vesicle initially is sphere, and then it deforms, and of course it's continuously lifting off the substrate, and this matches, I mean, this resembles qualitatively the behavior of a vesicle detaching from the substrate. This is again glass substrate in flow with a side view. So to quantify this sort of behavior, these are results from hot from the oven. This was just running when I was coming here. Didn't finish quite. So this is the effect of the bending on the migration velocity. As so this is migration velocity as a function of time. So from switching the flow and following the unbinding process of the vesicle, or correspondingly, one can think of it as a function from the distance, because we can distance from the wall. So as the time is progressing, the vesicle is moving further away from the substrate. So So there is a sharp increase in the beginning, so it's very fast because the deformation is bigger, but once the shape is kind of stable, stationary, there is a very slow decay with time, which one, even though it's not quite clear here from the plot, but we check that it decays quadratically with the distance, and there is a weak effect from the bending. So in general, the bending decreases the migration velocity, and it's neat because one can check the ratio between these two limiting long time results, and to check that this is indeed the ratio is proportional to the bending number. I don't have much time, so I'll just skip that here. So just to quickly summarize what's been going on, I'm in my work, I'm a relative newcomer. So as you can see, I start with the thinking about drops, thinking about vesicles, I think of them with drops with bending stresses. And so I've been working on developing some accurate simulations and non-linear small deformation analysis to account for to study effect of bending on deformation and migration. Of course, the future work in order to make the simulations and the work much more reliable and close to reality, we have to include the effect of membrane in compressibility and study things, much more exciting things like the flow-induced shape transformations, not always starting from a sphere, but starting from some other minimal shapes and seeing if we can go, for example, from prolates to disco sites or things like this. Check also what are the stationary shapes in flow. Some questions about what is the stationary shape of a vesicle in shear. Is it only prolate? That's what Seifert found, or one can find other shapes. Of course, one can study things like budding. Since I know how to put several components, non-uniform lipid density on the vesicle interface, so want to study if we can get budding transition, and of course lift on adherent vesicles and what's happening if we have two vesicles very in very near contact motion. There's a lot of people to acknowledge. So first of all, my hosts in the Colloidal Interfaces group. In fact, this is a work I've been doing in my spare time, so I should thank Professor Lipovsky for being patient with me, because in general I do experiments there. Professor Tom Powers, so Tom Powers introduced me to the vesicle problems two years ago, and got me excited about this whole project. And these are people, my advisors at Yale, Mike and Yerzha, who taught me how to work